so much paralyzing terror as in this hair-raising orgy of sadness.
The mouth of the streets to tell their friends how wonderful it is to be scared to death.
Hello and welcome to episode 866 of Dread Media. I'm your host, Desmond Reddick, back with you for another great episode. Dwayne and I are getting real again this week, and I'll let you know what we're talking about. But first, I'm going to let you know that we're proud to be sponsored by you. And by you, I mean the patron Dreadites. Over at patreon.com/dreadmedia, you get to support the show for as little as a dollar a month and receive all sorts of perks. Those perks turn into physical items, you know, the higher you go up and whatnot. Patreon.com/dreadmedia. Help keep the show going. I appreciate everybody who does. A brand new episode of Strange Times and Places, my DC Comics Elseworlds exclusive Patreon exclusive podcast, went up this past week, and I might do another one. I've got another one in the works, or I've got a video in the works. So we'll see. Regardless, patreon.com/dreadmedia. That's the place to go. Thank you to everyone who does. Mwah. Love you. What's going on this week? Well, Dwayne and I are talking about a very intense cinema verite presentation of a real crime spree in Australia. The film is called The Snowtown Murders, or in its homeland, I believe, is just called Snowtown. Dwayne and I talk about that, and then I'm going to come back and I'm going to do a Dread Media Top 5 films that feel too real. And really, yeah, okay, I'll talk about it when we get there. And we're going to play some new music, music that's come out within the last, let's say, calendar year. Some late, there's maybe a track of late 2023. And I got a brand new release in this as well. In fact, the only song that's not brand new is just a couple years old, and it's played after the Snowtown review. So let's get to that Snowtown review. But first, we're going to listen to a song by the band The Obsessed, from their brand new record, Gilded Sorrow. This is It's Not Okay by The Obsessed.
Not forgive, not forget the way it's gonna be. Your trip just went out of style. The sad and some, but yeah, it ain't all on me. I went the extra mile.
I'm back once again with my friend Dwayne. Dwayne, how are you?
If I had any faith in humanity, I don't. I'm not sure if I do anymore.
Oh,
I don't know. I'm feeling feeling a little bleak, and just, I don't know. A little shaken up, Des, by the last movie that I watched.
And, oh.
I think it might be the same one that you watched, too. So.
I think you might be right. I think it's one we've sort of talked about doing for a long time, hasn't it been?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And I'd heard about it before. I hadn't actually seen it, though. And just, you know, only recently saw it as we were preparing to for this recording session. And I don't know. I think... I'm sure I'll be okay eventually.
I hope so. I hope so. Perhaps it'll help to talk about the movie.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good point. That's
all right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we could start with the title.
Okay, I can handle that. I think. Yeah.
Okay.
You have to give me a trigger warning. Or, okay. Yeah.
Can you handle the title? Let's see.
Yes.
Go.
The Snowtown Murders. Yes, the Snowtown Murders.
Sure.
Which also, I saw was a Christmas movie, and then maybe a sequel to Jack Frost. I don't know.
Not a Hallmark Christmas movie filmed in Vancouver. No.
No.
Also just referred to as Snowtown. There's actually like two official titles to this movie.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, well, it was under Snowtown, I think, on Tubi.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
But on IMDb, it is. What happened? I lost it. Yeah, on IMDb it is the Snowtown Murders, but also original title Snowtown. So perhaps the international name of this movie is the Snowtown Murders, and it's just called Snowtown in Australia.
Yeah, I think so. That makes sense, because then people would be more familiar with it, perhaps. So,
yeah, I'm sure that perhaps the name Snowtown is enough to make an Australian kind of shiver, maybe.
Yes.
Because the Snowtown Murders from 2011 is the true story of Jamie Vlasakis, who is a young man who, among other members of his family and poor community, a lot of the people talking about this movie online refer to them as white trash. I'm not going to say that, but yeah, that's sort of the vibe, right? These are poor people. They live in, you know, sort of whether rundown houses or, you know, like prefab, you know, little mobile home kind of things.
Oh, yes.
And, well, due to the influence of one of them, they all come together for a little bit of deranged, violent vigilantism. Right?
As is the case, yeah. As is often the case, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so, that's basically what this is that this older gentleman who becomes Jamie's mom's boyfriend, John Bunting, who's played incredibly by Daniel Henshall. And Jamie is played by Lucas Pittaway. And this was his first movie, by the way.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, two incredible central performances in this one. As John is sort of the leader of this small gang of vigilantes who, you know, the first thing they're doing is they're just throwing, you know, dead kangaroo chunks at the front door of the local pedophile's house, right?
Oh, right. Yeah, who actually, maybe we should just mention, I guess I wasn't sure if it was the mom's kind of boyfriend or if it was just kind of like he'd come over sometimes and maybe just look after the kids if she had to leave town or whatever.
I got the vibe it was a boyfriend, yeah.
Yeah,
and,
I think so.
And he would, you know, when the mom was away, he would tell the boys to strip off and take pictures of them. So, so John from down the street or whatever seems like a pretty good guy when he comes to try and help them out of that situation. But from there, it only spins further and further into madness and violence and what starts out as taking revenge against pedophiles turns into, you know, violence against people who are drug addicts or violence against people who are overweight.
Right.
Yeah. So don't get your vigilantism jollies, dialed way up, because it's not just a bunch of people going around killing pedophiles.
Please, anybody John doesn't like.
Yeah, basically. Basically. And then his sort of manipulation of this group. However, we really do see this story through Jamie's eyes. And yes, that's part of the reason the movie is quite a difficult watch, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Well, and we haven't talked about this at all, other than the fact that we are watching this movie for this recording. So I'm interested to hear what you think of this. So Dwayne, it was your idea first, even though this is a movie I've been meaning to watch for ages as well. So tell me what your thoughts are on Justin Kurzel's The Snowtown Murders.
I think, well, bleak as fuck is what I wrote down here. But, that it, maybe there's a little bit of a stretch, but I think it's one of the more realistic depictions of, I mean, evil, if we call it, you know, consider evil as like, you know, being banal kind of thing, that I've seen in, you know, I haven't seen it in too many other films like this kind of,
right.
And what I mean by realistic is that it's not like played up for sensationalization, but at the same time, the person's not like a kind of outwardly repulsive kind of like psychopath, like he doesn't appear exactly to be a serial killer, and at the same time
he's quite a charming looking fellow, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and like, you know, and he you can see how he kind of works his way into everything and kind of gets his hooks in people and controls them and that, so that's kind of like the real terrifying part of it, is that, you know, really he is. But like in real life, he ends up being like Australia's worst serial killer, right. And yet he's not acting alone at all. Like he's not, you know, this is not, I don't know what, the BDK killer or like, you know, whatever kind of, so like serial killers we talk about usually in North America and that, or even elsewhere in the world. So yeah, definitely a chilling depiction of evil.
Sorry to interrupt here, but you brought it up. I mean, it is quite similar to the BTK killer. I think the MO, except it is, you know, a group basically, yes. Right? Like they would kidnap these people, they would imprison them, torture them, and then kill them. That's what BTK did.
Well,
he just happened to, you know, drag them out to the woods or wherever. But these murders are also, what are they called? The barrel murders or something? Is that what it's?
Yes.
Yeah. Because they would hide some of the bodies in barrels or whatever.
Right, because that was something I did kind of think about during the movie, but then, like, it's just kind of not, you don't see everything, and I think it's because of the way that they kind of follow Jamie around, so, like, if he doesn't see something, there's no chance that we're going to know about it, which is not a bad thing.
It certainly leaves the film to be pretty confusing in spots.
For
me, I'll say. And then, like, looking into it, there's a lot of people like, you have to watch this 40-minute documentary on YouTube about these murders, because it will fill in every missing blank from the movie. The movie will make sense. Now, I haven't gone and done that because I just don't believe you should need to watch a documentary to understand. So I'm just sort of happy leaving elements of this movie ununderstandable, simply because criminal acts were taking place that Jamie didn't find himself involved in. So
we don't
actually really see them. We sort of occasionally will see the aftermath, or, you know, like I'm thinking like Jamie walks into the shed and there's somebody on the floor, you know, like he didn't bring that person in there, but now he knows they're there kind of thing. And that's how he's drawn into the situation.
And then we sometimes hear like kind of, I guess like kind of the one of the parts of the MO is that the, you know, the killers get the victims to kind of like, you know, leave like a answering machine message, kind of basically saying, hey, I'm leaving town, da 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 da, just kind of create,
I hate you,
you know, some sort of reason as to why they're, you know, why they're not around anymore.
Yeah.
You know, which I think is actually pretty chilling in that, but at the same time, it does make it a little confusing because you're not quite, sometimes it's not even quite sure who is that character. Like, is that Mary? Is that, you know, somebody else that we only meet, like, during certain parts of the movies? Yeah, it's interesting. It's not necessarily like an elaborate plot, but it kind of like unfolds. I don't even know if I should say it unfolds naturally, because even though it takes place in sequence, like there are kind of like time jumps, you know, and you kind of have to look at like hair and things like that to kind of figure out how long, you know, how long this was after this probably. Things just kind of happen kind of like in real life, you know, you're just like, like it seems less like there's like, someone plotting a story, you know, and more like it's just like a, I wouldn't say documentary, but it just, just kind of unfolds.
There's a cinema verite feel to this movie that is completely undeniable.
Yeah. And I actually kind of really enjoyed that because I don't know, just the more you kind of, especially with true stories, is the more that you try to construct them, like, and kind of build them as like, you know, like a movie plot. It just, I don't know. I'm just, it's going to take something away from it, usually for me. So,
yeah. See, it's funny how we're talking about this because this, otherwise, this would be a film that you and I would be clamoring to see together. This is very much, you know, a Des and Dwayne movie. You know, it's foreign. It's got one charming guy exerting the influence on another to commit heinous acts. Like, I feel like we've covered movies with this plot before. And still, this is, I would probably say, the most unique amongst them, simply due to the fact that it is sort of this sobering verite style depiction of these actual real murders, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And because of that verite style, like, we never get, you know, like an inner monologue from, say, like the mom going, like, oh no, here he goes again, kind of thing. Like, it's like, you know, like, it's hard to even know, does she even know exactly what's going on even between, like, her own sons and stuff, you know? Like, I mean, I don't know, you know, how there's, like, a problem with, an issue with the oldest son, Troy, I think his name is. And, like, so I'm not 100% sure whether, you know, she knows necessarily about that or, I don't know, there's some other things, one of the questions, I don't think this is really I don't know if this is a spoiler or not. I don't think it is really. Like, there's even a point though, like, where Jamie goes to like a psychiatrist or doctor, and I think he's getting like medication for like schizophrenia. But the thing is I kind of was wondering, are they doing that just so he can get like some sort of disability check?
Yeah, that's exactly what they're doing. So that's also what I read just a tiny little bit about these murders, in that, they would kill these people and then like apply for, you know, government assistance in their name or go to like receive their check or whatever.
Okay. That makes sense.
So there's that thing where he was taking Jamie somewhere to, you know, like to sign his name on a piece of paper, right?
Right.
And he's standing behind him, looking at him doing it, kind of thing. So yeah, that's something about getting government benefits and stuff. So
yeah. All right.
Which again, pretty bold, actually.
And of course, and I think it just shows how like much more common that was. And I'm sure it still happens now. Like, I think like Ted DiBiase's family got in trouble for something like that.
Really?
Yeah. They're running like this kind of unemployment scam where basically like all of them are getting like welfare, but they don't really need welfare. Like, they already have other money and stuff. And I don't know. Anyway. So, like, this is actually fairly recent. I think it was maybe over COVID. But but it goes to show, I think there's even more of that going on, like identity fraud and stuff in the past, maybe with, you know, when it was less strict, I guess, maybe. I don't know. Some of the most interesting scenes, too, is, like, this does raise, I know it's obviously, like, based on a true story, But it does still raise kind of interesting questions, you know, like about like society and like how, you know, like there's several times there's almost like these like dinner kitchen parties where people are just sitting around saying like, you know, if I caught one of these, you know, pedos, I would do this to him or that to him and stuff. Yeah. And, yeah, I don't know. It's just one of those interesting things where you're kind of like.
And then those kind of turn to strategizing parties.
Yes, exactly.
Where they're like, oh, well, I heard that this guy, you know, fucked his niece or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. And they're like, okay, well, he's on the list. And like, John's like, only two. At one point, John's like, only two. Right. Cause I guess they're like getting the help of this, like, is that a trans woman?
I don't know. I thought maybe he was just a transvestite, like a man.
Or maybe just a gay guy who dresses up like that. But anyway, he's sort of like their sexual deviancy expert, you know?
He sits at the table.
Still,
he's still compliant with them, though, right? Like, he's not, like, I don't think it's against his will or anything like that.
No. They're there as part of just the group sitting around the kitchen table.
Yeah.
You know, a group of like nine people or something. And, you know, and they're just outwardly talking about, well, we'll go get this guy and we'll kill him. And then, you know, that.
Yeah. Yes.
It's pretty wild. It's pretty wild.
It was. And there's also like a little interesting, like, little tidbits that are like literally like, they just show up at some point in the movie and like they're never really addressed or anything. But like, you know, there's the one, I don't know what his name was. He was mostly silent. He's kind of like the bigger guy, like the bigger, taller friend of John.
Right. Right. Yeah.
He has like a tiger tattoo on his back, I think. But like, yeah, like there's some point near, I don't know, probably about three quarters of the way through the movie. And they just like, you know, it's just like they're having like the boys night out doing whatever. And then, or maybe a boy has afternoon doing whatever, instead of going fishing, they're, you know, tying up someone in the bathroom and killing them. But, but then like, yeah, the buddy, like he says, oh yeah, I'm just going to drop you off at home so you can have some family time. He just gets out of the car and like, for some reason, I'd assume this guy's just some kind of guy who just hangs around with John all the time and, you know, just to kill people or whatever. And then it's like, no, this guy's a family too.
Yeah,
and, you know, it's just like these things like where they kind of, I don't know, it just kind of, again, the like, unlike an actual movie, like it just kind of, you know, it's a little bit more like real life in that it kind of, you're like, oh shit, these are like real people who actually like have jobs or spouses or whatever. And, you know, just like, and how often in movies you kind of get really tied up in the whole plot. And it seems like almost nobody has jobs doing anything because they're so focused on the plot that's being performed before you. Right.
Right.
Like,
right.
Story. And, yeah, just like, even like little tidbits like that, I was like, oh shit, like this guy's actually, you know, and this other guy, you know, has a disagreement with his wife and all this. And, despite the fact they're like, you know, wrapped up in all these terrible things, they're still like, you know, just these kind of mundane domestic issues.
Yeah,
and stuff.
It's sort of slice of life, you know?
Yeah, it is. Like, it really is.
Like, it's one of those movies. There's no police investigation, you know? No. Like, none of that. This is straight up just, you know, we're seeing things from the perspective of one character, and that is it. That is it. Yeah. So it's even confusing at times as to what's going on with this group of people because Jamie isn't there for a chunk of it.
Right, exactly.
Now, to let you know, I don't know if you know this. Well, I guess you do if you saw the postscript at the end of this movie.
Yeah, but, I did.
Yeah, but Jamie is up for parole in 2025.
Yes.
So that'll be interesting. No, I think part of the deal. Does that in the postscript too, or did I read that somewhere else where he gave up information on John, so he got a slightly reduced sentence?
Yeah, so he got like life sentence, but with an eligibility for parole in like 26 years or something like that, I think it is. And then, and he's currently serving prison under a false name and undisclosed location.
Yeah. So he's already sort of witness protectioned a little bit. So we'll never know then, probably. But for sure, John Bunting is never getting out of prison. So that's something you can hang your hat on.
Oh, man. Yes. Yes.
So
yes.
All in all, 11 people were killed that they know of. But I think Jamie was only involved in 5 or 6 of them, I think.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So, kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I found the film like so compelling and, hard to look away, even though there is, like, there's a lot of drawn out monotony in this movie. And on one hand, I'm like, man, I wish this movie was, you know, a little tighter, you know, a little punchier. But also on the other hand, I feel like it kind of served the movie in a way.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay.
No, I understand. Yeah.
It's just that, like, after a while, so for, like, watching it, I was like, okay, this is a very, very slowly paced movie. But after a while, the pace stopped mattering, and it was more about Jamie and John.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
And
yeah.
those two actors, you know, and it just sort of became like more of like this, you know, masterful example of a relationship on screen. And considering that Lucas Pitaway was the first movie he was in, is absolutely shocking to me.
Oh yeah, absolutely. There's definitely there's definitely some scenes too in this movie that you know, he had to do. And
Well, I mean, there's first of all, we should probably warn people about this movie. There is, you know, sexual assault that you can see on screen.
Yes.
There's also, yeah, like, extended torture depicted. However, not like, it's not like it's ATROZ.
No.
But like, what movie is, you know?
It's like, that's always just been the benchmark. It's the new benchmark. Not quite ATROZ, but
yeah, it's kind of my extreme marker. So that actually like brings up the question: is this extreme horror?
I don't think it is, actually.
Okay.
So, because I just think that, I mean, obviously horrible things happen in it and everything, but I don't know.
One scene with the pliers.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And that I had to turn my head away from.
Yeah.
There's that.
It's just a little bit more like, I mean, it's not quite like this movie, obviously, but it's, you know, like, kind of a little bit more like, I don't know, Henry the Portrait of a Serial Killer or something like that. It's more like
big Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer vibes.
Yeah, exactly. So
tone, that's right. Performances, and even like the way the plot unfolds in a very like verite, realistic, you know, we don't know whether it's been 3 months or 2 years or 1 week, you know, we have no idea kind of thing. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. That is very, very, very apt vibe to say that this is Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer-esque for sure.
Yes. As we were saying too, but the it is kind of a slower moving, but yeah, just it is kind of immersive though. Like, it's there's another movie we'll be talking about later that is like probably a half an hour shorter than this one, and seems like it's probably 2.5 hours long.
So, okay.
So this one, like, you know, despite that it's 2 hours, actually doesn't. You really do get into it. Like, it's just kind of it's almost like you wake up in the morning, and because actually there is a lot of scenes actually of people like going to sleep and waking up kind of thing.
Right.
Which is interesting. Right. As like a transition point to kind of like jump forward in time. So it's almost like that. It's almost like you're kind of like, okay, I wonder what this day is going to hold, or like, are these people ever going to get caught, or what, like, what's happening here? You know, like, is there any justice? Is someone going to squeal on them? What's going on? And, it's very, compelling. So
for sure. Yeah. There is this sort of impending vibe of, you know, this movie has to end somehow. Like,
right.
Yeah. Like, how is it going to end? Again, there is no investigation, right? It just, it sort of finds a place to end, and then the postscripts come up, you know? And it's
exactly.
And at that point, you can finally like let out your breath a little bit, I guess.
Yeah. And I actually like that ending. I don't, like, sometimes think it's kind of, like, especially if it's based on a true story, it's just kind of like, I don't know, it's like after the fact, you know, that we have to see the police show up.
We don't need a bunch of SUVs with cops pouring out, kicking in their door. We don't need that.
And then there'll be like a crying mom going, "It's a monster, my children." You know what I mean? Not, again, it's horrible, don't get me wrong, but I'm just saying, I'm just tired of seeing cliche shit in movies, right? So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man.
Well, I mean, anything else to say about the Snowtown murders?
No, I don't even remember the music in it, so I can't even say anything about that.
The music was sort of like a... What I recall of the music is like sort of like barren electric guitar.
Yeah,
is sort of this sort of like ambient score to it, which I only, again, it's funny you say that. I picked up on it in like one place in the movie, and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. Let's see how he's doing that. Like, it's sort of, I think my brain was taking a bit of a break from what I was seeing, and it was like, how are they making this music? Okay, well, this is clearly some sort of feedback from an electric guitar, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. So that's kind of interesting, very sort of maybe avant-garde or whatever. Or drone music, maybe even, could be considered, but yeah.
That's okay. I've often said if you don't notice the music, or if you like really, really love the music, it's kind of, they're both... That's both good, you know, like not noticing it is sometimes means at least it's not bad, you know, and it's not intrusive.
Is this on Shudder? I watched it on Tubi, and I know it's on Tubi.
I think it was on Shudder at one point, but I don't believe it is now. Okay,
maybe that's the case. Because on IMDb, it says streaming on AMC Plus, and usually when I see AMC Plus, it means it's also on Shudder.
I think I even looked on Shudder just because I'd forgotten like which one it was supposed to be on, so I kind of like
All the movies we're covering today were either from Tubi or Shudder, so it's free to watch, highly recommended. Of course, it's not for the faint of heart. I would say if your tastes tend to veer towards extreme horror, then I think this is a pretty amazing example of it. I mean, look, like, it's not that much different from The Girl Next Door, you know, like Jack Ketchum's book, you know? You know, very, you know, imposing figure convinces people to do their bidding kind of thing. Again, true story, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Crazy.
What a world.
Yeah. But yes, the Snowtown Murders / Snowtown comes highly recommended from me. I think I have to give it like a 3.5. This is not like a movie I think I'll ever watch again, but it was certainly a good watch.
Yeah, I think I'm going to give it 4, but I also will say it'll probably be a while before I watch it again. Yeah. Yes. I think I remember it pretty well. I just kind of really like that kind of... I don't know, I guess experiential vibe or whatever. The fact that you just kind of sit back and you just go with it, you know? So.
Yeah, like it's, it sort of feels like an art film in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Oh, I like that, though. Yeah.
So, All right. Well, since these were referred to as the barrel murders in some aspect, we're going to play a little bit of modern thrash from Municipal Waste. And this is their song, Barreled Rage. Thanks, Dwayne.
You're welcome.
Let's go! Creating the political stand through your snow. I will born. Welcome to the car.
right, we are back, and it's time for another
Dread Media Top 5.
That's right, another Dread Media Top 5. This time, we're talking about Dread Media Top 5 films that get a little too real. Now, this is not something to complain about, people. I'm not actually complaining about it. Because, look, three, four, five. Yeah, I'm like, all of these movies are on, like, a list of my favorite movies. So, let's start with number 5. You've probably heard me talk about all of these movies in some aspect on this podcast. So I'm going to start with number 5 as Shane Meadows' Dead Man's Shoes. There's just something so bleak and quiet, and the boiling rage in this movie just simmers, man. And Patty Considine is just fantastic. Gary Stretch is great as Sonny. It's just a man's, a soldier's special needs brother, was brutalized a little while back, and now that he's back in town, it's time, it's time for Richard to talk to some fools, And Patty Considine's performance is just so chilling, and like just so scary. One of the scariest performances you'll ever see, in my opinion. Dead Man's Shoes from 2004. Number 4 on my list is a much more recent film. I'm talking about 2015's Green Room. You guys know this one. I don't have to go into this one so much. You know, there's an element here of shit that's very similar to some shit that I experienced. I guess about the age of the... No, maybe younger. A little younger than the age of the characters in this movie, where a punk band shows up to play a show, and it turns out they're at a neo-Nazi compound. And then, once things get to shit, they decide to get the fuck out of Dodge, but before they do, they witness a murder in the green room. And, I guess, they have to protect themselves after that, as a siege is laid. It's a pretty insane movie. I love it. Definitely due for a rewatch. It's on Prime. It's on Tubi. I don't know if it's on Prime in Canada, though. I think it is, actually. I think I've seen it flipping around. But it's on Tubi, hey? It's amazing. Green Room, if you haven't seen it, holy shit. Tubi. It's on Tubi for free. Yikes. My number 3. So this movie came out in 1988. I'm going to say I saw this in about 1994. 93 or 94. I was 13 or 14 when I first saw this movie. And it was on... probably like Super Channel. Either Super Channel or Bravo would do these film festival months. They did this like, the summer of Kubrick, where they like every Friday they did a Kubrick movie. And that's where I saw the entire catalog of Kubrick. Taping that shit. I'd seen a bunch, but, not the more obscure ones. So, Spoorloos is the, Belgian title? Is that what it is? It's Belgium, right? George Sluzer's The Vanishing. The original The Vanishing. I'm sorry, it's Netherlands... France, West Germany. It's Dutch. It's not Belgian. Spoorloos. Yeah, actually, Spoorloos makes more sense as Dutch. This one is just, it feels too real. These young lovers, are on a road trip and they stop at a, you know, as a gas station slash, you know, mini mart sort of thing slash, you know, roadside stand, you know, a big rest area sort of thing. And, you know, I think the dude, while the dude's in the bathroom, or while he's gassing up, his girl just disappears and, turns out she's been abducted. And then, you know, years later, Rex, the guy, starts to get letters from the guy who took her, who promises to show him what he did to her. Yeah. And, man, I suppose everybody sort of has this fear, but it was this movie that unlocked it in me. I'm talking about like the fear of being buried alive. It's not a spoiler to say that. Vanishing is still a very, very powerful film. Way more powerful than its American remake. A truly chilling look at evil. And it's so real and so just, I don't know. Yeah. One of the best horror movies ever. Again, all of these are. Number two. Am I recording? Yeah, I'm recording. Number two, we go to 2007 for David Fincher's Zodiac. Look, this one is much more cinematic. It's much more overarching than anything else in my list here. You know, the other movies seem to be smaller, more intimate things. It feels like you're around normal people with a camera rolling, you know? Not so much this one, but Zodiac has several moments of such shocking intensity that, it's hard to leave off this list and it's hard to not put it near the top. I'm talking about the murder of the couple in the field. I'm talking about, Jake Gyllenhaal in the basement. I'm talking about, for me, the John Carroll Lynch interview. God damn. So fucking good. Zodiac is untouchable. Fincher's best movie by a margin. And my number one list on my list of films that get too real, I'm talking about the realest one of all, John McNaughton's Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. Michael Rooker gives possibly the greatest film performance of all time. Possibly, you know, it's truly engrossing, truly terrifying. It feels like it makes you complicit in their crimes along the way. It's that grimy. And, I don't know. This one's not for the squeamish, but it's an incredible piece of filmmaking. We're going to see what John McNaughton's been up to. I know he had a Masters of Horror episode, which I get it. Based on Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, it makes sense. Wild Things. Okay, he directed Wild Things. What episode of Masters of Horror? Ugh. Heckle's Tale. Yikes. Not a good one. He directed The Harvest as recently as 2013, and that is it. But I don't even, he didn't even do the sequel to Henry. No, he didn't. Yes, Henry had a sequel. No, it's not any good. But this original film is so pure, so horrifying in its portrayal of the banality of evil. Michael Rooker's performance is all-time Hall of Famer, wearing his own clothing. You want to watch something grimy and scary? Check out Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. It's my number one on the list. We're going to get out of here. What is this? Is this an EP? It's 10 tracks, but the songs are really short. I don't know. Social Grace by Brat. Brat look like four people who should be in bands, but not the same band as each other. And I don't know what they play. Is it grindcore? Is it power violence? Is it hardcore? Is it some mixture of the three plus something else? I don't know. But Social Grace from Brat rules. This is Human Offense by Brat. And that is us, my friends. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode as much as I did putting it together for you. And if you did, hey, check out more at patreon.com/dreadmedia. You can send me an email with feedback or questions or with a voicemail file attached to dreadmediapodcast@gmail.com. I'm on Facebook, just as my name, Desmond Reddick. But there's also a Dread Media Facebook group. Oh, washing machine kicked in. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky as Dread Media or some form thereof. Now the dog's going crazy. God, let me get out of here. Yeah, that's about it. Dwayne is Devil Dinosaur JR on Twitter, and that's it, I think. He's also in the group on Facebook, so you want to give him a piece of your mind about the Snowtown murders? I don't know why you would. It was a good review, and we both enjoyed it. Let's get out of here. I'm going to play a song from a band whose last record came out last year, last summer. I may have played a song from this record before. The record's called Sado Sex for Dummies. And it's by the... Kirby's going mental. This is the... What are they? They're like stoner rock, garage rock, kind of punky, but like, yeah, slower shit, you know? I don't know. These guys are good, though. They're Loose Sutures. And this song is Highway Shooter. Protect yourself from the highway shooter. Keep a lookout for yourselves and for others. Take care of yourselves, and we'll see you next week. Here's Highway Shooter by Loose Sutures.